Hello, mystery and thriller fans, and welcome to the fifth and penultimate episode of Emily C. Whitson's Beneath the Marigolds. My name is Meredith, and this is Camcat Unwrapped. Previously on Beneath the Marigolds, Reese tried to smooth things over with both Lamb and Luca. Meanwhile, Anne reveals to Nick that her ex-boyfriend is married to her best friend, Honey. Anne becomes more convinced the retreat is a front for a reality dating show, thanks to Christina's meddling and Teddy's fear that someone is slipping him drugs. More twists and turns coming up.
41. Anne. I throw open the door to the back kitchen. It slams against the wall, and the thud reverberates throughout the room like a wrecking ball. Luca is the only one in the room. He's in an apron cleaning the stovetop. When he sees me, he lowers his head, closes his eyes, and mumbles, "Shit," under his breath. I stride toward him and use the momentum to push him against the refrigerator. His smell, sharp cheddar and coffee, fills my nostrils. I grab fistfuls of his shirt and shake him. "What did you do to her?" I yell.
"Nothing, I swear."
"Whoa, whoa," Nick says.
His eyes are frantic. He pulls me off of Luca and gets between us.
"What is going on? How do you know this guy?"
"He's Reese's shitty ex-boyfriend. Reese was granted an order of protection after Luca attacked her at one of her performances. After he smashed her head into a wall, he yanked her by the hair and dragged her across the floor."
"Is this true?"
Nick asks Luca.
"Yes, yes, it's true."
Luca looks sheepish, but I'm not buying it.
"I made a horrible, horrible mistake, but it was 7 years ago, and I've apologized about 100 times.
"Sorry, buddy," I say. "That's not how it works. You don't get to act like a crazy person, apologize, and then go back to normal like nothing happened."
"Speak for yourself," he exclaims,
as I continue to rail against Nick, my arms flailing in every direction. Nick grips both my arms firmly and holds them at my sides.
"Just calm down," Nick says. "Let's talk this out."
"Don't you dare tell me to calm down," I scream.
I'm sorry, Nick coos. "Bad choice of words. Let's just hear what he has to say before hitting him. We'll get more information that way."
"Hey, what the fu—"
Luca asks, just as Nick turns to him, grips his neck, and slams his head into the refrigerator. Luca's eyes roll back into his head, and for a second, I'm afraid he's really hurt.
"And you're going to stay here and answer her questions, okay?"
Luca rubs the back of his head and nods. I stop wriggling. "Fine," I say to Nick. To Luca, "Tell me what you did with Reese."
"Nothing, I swear to God. I didn't even know she was going to be here."
"That's bullshit," I say. "So Lamb just hit you for no reason then?"
"No. Well, yes. He hit me when he learned about the order of protection. The fucker broke my nose. I couldn't see straight for a week. I'm not saying I didn't deserve it, but I've changed since then."
I stare more closely at his nose. It seems fine, but it has been about 5 weeks. I tap my foot, cross my arms. So I'm just supposed to believe that Reese's abusive ex-boyfriend shows up a mere few weeks before she disappears, and it's a total coincidence?
"Abusive is pushing it," he says. "It was one time."
Nick and I give him a look, and he puts his hands up in defense.
"Look, there's nothing I can say that'll change your mind, but that's the truth. I saw her that one day, that was it. The rest of the retreat, I stayed out of her hair."
I'm about to protest when I hear Christina's deep voice behind me.
"Anne, I need to talk to you."
She's between two handlers, and her eyes are the size of small slits. I don't know how she found me so quickly. She was outside, all the way down on the beach, and there was no one near the kitchen aside from Nick when I entered. I want to tell her to fuck off,
that I'm in the middle of something important. But I doubt that will end well. Not with her enormous bodyguards by her side. Fine, I say through gritted teeth. Christina turns on her heels, and I can tell our conversation won't be pleasant. I'm not finished with you, I mutter to Luca, as Christina exits the room. I'm almost out the door when Luca calls after me.
She was upset about Lam. If you find him, I'll bet he has answers.
I'm working on it, I mutter under my breath. 42. Anne.
Sit down, Christina says as we enter the talking room alone.
I close the door behind me and take the seat opposite her. My temples throb. My blood boils. I squeeze the arms of the chair until my nails tear the fabric. Why is Reese's ex-boyfriend here? I ask.
Luca? He's one of my cooks. I had no idea he was connected to Reese until she arrived.
So you know their history then?
She told me as much when she discovered he was here.
And you didn't think to do anything about it? I'm shouting now, but I don't care. Maybe, I don't know, fire him?
He's a great worker, she says evenly. He never gave me a reason to doubt him. I believe everyone deserves a second chance. I would think you, of all people, would understand that.
What's that supposed to mean?
She sinks back in her chair. For the first time, I realize there's a sadness there, under the surface, behind all the polish.
I don't know, she sighs. Everyone on this retreat has failed in some way to develop a healthy, successful relationship. My job is to give them another opportunity before it's too late.
Too late? As in reaching the age of 35? I scoff.
More or less, she says. After 35, it's harder to have children, so your chances of having a family dwindle. If you are still single at 35, no prior marriage, it starts to become distasteful. People take pity on you. They whisper behind your back. They believe there must be something inherently wrong with you.
She sounds like she's rehearsing a speech. And then she seems to ad-lib.
Trust me, I would know.
I'm not sure how to respond to that, so I mutter under my breath. This is so fucked up.
We can agree to disagree.
She smooths the hem of her skirt.
The fact of the matter is, Anne, that you are staying at my place, attending my retreat, and while you do, you will abide by my rules. If you don't like them, you can leave. But I can't have you interrogating the participants, threatening my staff, sneaking around the house and looking for clues. I put up with your behavior at first because of your, let's call them special circumstances. But now, I'm fed up. You're making a mockery of my business.
Why didn't you tell me about Lam? I say.
What?
She seems to break, just for a second. But perhaps I'm just imagining that.
What about him?
You said Reese didn't connect with anyone here, and I've heard from several others that she did.
Christina sighs, closes her eyes, and rubs her temples.
Reese didn't leave engaged or in a committed relationship. I don't consider that a connection. Just a fling.
But you lied to me. Why?
I didn't lie. I just told you. We have different definitions of the word connection.
Is it because something happened to him? He's missing too, but I'm sure you already knew. Christina puts her hand up.
Enough. I'm tired, Anne. So very, very tired.
Her head is lowered at an angle that highlights the dark circles under her eyes. Without the intense lights in this room, I don't think I would have ever noticed.
I don't ever want to hear Reese's name again, she continues. If you're only here to follow some trail of non-existent breadcrumbs, then I can arrange for you to go home as soon as today. There are a lot of people who actually want to be here to fulfill a dream. And if you don't believe in that dream, then there's no point continuing this journey. My heart pounds in my throat. I take a deep breath, try to think rationally. I could continue to be stubborn, but then I would leave the retreat empty-handed. I've come this far, and the answers are this close. I can feel them at my fingertips, just within my grasp. If I could reach a bit further, then I would hold something tangible. But I can't do that if I'm not on this island. So I nod, a tacit surrender, a white flag. Do you want to go home, Anne? She clarifies. No, I whisper, so soft it's barely audible. I don't want to go home. Okay, then, she exhales. No more mention of Reese while you're here. Is that clear? I nod again. Clear, I mumble. Now, is there anything else you'd like to discuss? Perhaps your budding romance with Nick? I swallow, try to formulate an appropriate answer. I don't want to play this game anymore, but I have to. I tell Christina what she wants to hear. I answer all her prodding questions. As I sit there, I study the talking room. I hate it, this room. In this small space, there are no windows, no photographs, no design, no color. Just white walls cornering me on all sides. It's suffocating. It reminds me of a mental institution. Maybe it's fitting, though. Maybe, just maybe, I'm losing my mind. I'm making wild accusations without reliable evidence. I'm making decisions based on my intuition, not on facts. I'm close to being evicted from this island. I'm about to be fired from my job for taking advantage of someone under my supervision. And the worst of it is that a part of me doesn't care. Finding Reese is my main objective now. And I know in my heart of hearts that something terrible happened to Reese while she was here. I'll continue to search for her if it kills me.
43. Reese. A couple hours later, Magda knocked on my door. It was time to get ready for the nightly cocktail party, and she was here to do my makeup. I knew I was a mess. I could feel the swelling in my face, the puffiness around my eyes. The rapping continued, intensifying.
Reese! She yelled. Let me in!
I didn't want her to see me like this, but I also couldn't not let her in. 1 minute, I said. I wiped my cheeks and checked my appearance in the closest mirror. It was just as bad as I had feared, but there was nothing I could do about it in the next 30 seconds. I sucked in my breath and I opened the door. I kept my face turned toward the floor, but Magda didn't miss it.
What happened to your face? She shrieked.
I'm sorry, Magda. I winced. It's been a rough day. She screamed and turned on her heel. She muttered various curse words as she padded down the hall. I wasn't sure where she was going, but I was glad to be alone. I shuffled to the bathroom, turned on the faucet, and splashed cool water on my face and neck. I huddled over the sink and took deep breaths, trying to calm myself down.
Reese!
I jumped at the nearby voice. It was Christina, hovering over the end of the marble sink. The running water must have muffled her footsteps.
Christina, hey, I didn't hear you.
Magda said you were upset.
She went to get you some ice.
I pressed on my cheeks in a futile attempt to both hide my face and bring down the swelling.
I'm fine. I'm just tired.
Which was true. I was exhausted. We hardly got any sleep, with the early mornings and late nights. We also didn't eat much, with the odd mealtimes, so I felt like I was constantly low on energy, or short-tempered and hangry. I wondered if I would have acted differently not hitting Nick, not crying so much over Lamb, being more careful with my words, if I was rested and satiated. I didn't even have a distraction at the retreat, so all I could do was focus on the participants, my love life or lack thereof, and the same circular thoughts. Sometimes it felt like I was going crazy, like Teddy sobering up and stuffing a check in his pocket. Did I imagine that, or did that really happen?
"Do you want to talk about it?" she asked. "We could go to a talking room."
I sighed. I didn't have the stamina to filter my responses. "I really, really don't." I reached for a hand towel to dry a lingering wet spot on my cheek.
"I think it'll help to talk it out," she prodded.
"What do you want me to say?" I finally snapped. "That you were right? That Lamb was sleeping with someone else? That no matter what I do, I seem to end up with the same shitty guys? That there's something so wrong with me that I can't hold on to someone for even a week?" I instantly felt bad about my outburst, but I was too embarrassed to apologize. I threw the hand towel onto the marble sink, flopped down onto the vanity stool, and covered my face in my hands. It was quiet, and then I heard Christina's footsteps. I prayed she left the room. Of course, I was wrong. I felt her tap my forearm a minute later. I glanced up to find her on the other vanity stool. She had moved it from the second sink so we were arm's length apart. Her expression surprised me. There was a sadness there I hadn't recognized before.
"There's nothing wrong with you," she said softly.
My eyes moistened at the unexpected kindness. When I didn't respond, she continued.
"I've been around shitty people my whole life. At first, it was an act of rebellion. I was mad at my family for abandoning me, so to get attention, I found the most destructive people I could. And then it just sort of became a habit." She was speaking to me, but I could tell she wasn't really speaking to me. Her shoulders were hunched, and she was staring off to the side. "Maybe it's a form of masochism, penance for the wrongs you think you did." I didn't know what to say. Up until this point, Christina had been so closed off, revealing so few personal details. I was curious about her, of course, but I didn't want to pry if she didn't want to share. And now that she was sharing, I couldn't believe we had something in common. She always seemed so poised, so indestructible. Christina met my gaze and held it. She opened her mouth, as if she was about to say something. Of course, Magda came rushing in before Christina could vocalize her thought. "I got the ice," she cried, waving the pack in front of her. Magda's entrance seemed to bring Christina back to the present. She sat up, crossed her legs, cleared her throat. Whatever she was going to say, she seemed to have changed her mind. She took the ice pack from Magda and handed it to me. "Thank you, Magda," Christina said. "Why don't you go work on another participant?"
"But she's the last one."
Christina shot her a look, and Magda nodded in understanding. She left, and Christina and I were alone again. When my bedroom door clicked shut, Christina continued.
"Anyway, the point is, you're better than that. Don't let other people's opinions define you."
I nodded, scrunched my eyebrows. She was being vague, but I thought I understood what she was saying. I needed to dust myself off, get back out there. This sounded good in theory, but the reality was I was just too tired. Christina seemed to read my mind. In another rare instance of compassion, she rubbed my shoulder.
"Why don't you lie down for a few hours? I'm not supposed to let participants skip the beginning of the cocktail party, but we can make an exception this once."
"Thank you," I sighed. I almost started crying again, but Christina held her palm up.
"No more tears," she said.
I nodded. "Okay." When she left, there was an eerie silence that filled the void. I crawled to my bed, sank into the mattress, and closed my eyes. I tried to shut out all the thoughts bouncing around in my head. Lam and Trixie, Teddy's check, Christina's confession of sorts. Right before I drifted off to sleep, Christina's words came back to me. I'm not supposed to let participants skip the beginning of the cocktail party. That seemed like an odd thing to say. I thought she didn't answer to anyone. 44. Reese. I woke to a light tap, tap, tap on my forehead. I swatted at it, but the pressure increased. I opened my eyes enough to see Magda, tapping her forefinger between my brows. The slit in my eyes, combined with her proximity to my face, created a fisheye lens, making her upturned button nose appear bigger than it was. Her gaze crawled down to meet mine, magnifying her eyes behind her large rose-rimmed glasses.
"Veiki, veiki," Magda said.
I pushed myself up with my elbows. The room was hazy. I felt like someone who had risen from the dead.
"We need to do your makeup now,"
Magda said as she pressed a cool compress to my eyes.
"It's been few hours and eyes are worse."
"Okay, okay," I said, using both arms to create some space between us. "Give me just 1 minute and then I'll come sit for you, okay?" Magda harrumphed and muttered something incoherent under her breath. She shuffled her little legs quickly to the bathroom, not shifting her weight, making her appear more robot than human. I threw my legs over the bed and tried to shake the last vestiges of sleep. When I arrived downstairs 20 minutes later, my fog still was just starting to lift. It was also pitch black outside, the sliver of moon hidden behind clouds, and I was used to starting the cocktail party at sunset. Everything felt off. I accidentally bumped into Nick. He was talking to his two female friends, and his face contorted when he saw me. Awesome, I thought. Just awesome. "I'm sorry, Nick," I said. "I just woke up and I guess I'm still feeling a little dizzy." I waved at his lady friends. "Hello, girls. Excuse me." Before I could leave, Nick grabbed my elbow.
"Hey, you sure you're all right?"
His brows were furrowed, his lips pursed. His lips seemed so soft, like clouds. "I'm not sure," I replied. "No, yes, no, I'm fine."
"Let's get you some water, okay?"
All right." This was very surprising. When had Nick decided to forgive me? Nothing made sense anymore. He led me outside. I glanced over my shoulder to offer an apologetic look to his now unhappy companions. While Nick ordered an ice water from the bartender by the pool, I glanced around at the other participants. I noticed Trixie, on one of the sofas closest to the patio doors, stroking Lam's leg. My stomach lurched, and I turned my back on the sight as quickly as I could.
"Here," Nick said, as he pushed the glass of water into my hand. "Drink that."
I gulped it down, hoping the cool liquid would shake me out of my funk. "Thank you," I said. That was nice." He offered a soft smile as he passed the glass back to the bartender.
"Can you refill that?"
I thought of Christina's words. "You're better than that." I decided it was now or never to apologize. "Nick?"
"Yeah?"
he responded as he grabbed my refill. "I'm really sorry again about the other night. I feel terrible about what happened." He studied me, seemingly assessing my sincerity. Then his lip curled up and to the left. I hadn't noticed his lopsided grin before. It was endearing.
"Don't worry about it," he said. "We're all going a little crazy here."
My shoulders fell in relief. I hadn't realized how much that had been weighing on me. In my periphery, I saw Lam approach, and my shoulders hunched right back up. I wasn't ready to talk to him yet. I didn't respond when he wrapped his arms around me.
"Hey, sweetheart," he said with a quick kiss on my lips. "I missed you."
I stood stock still. I didn't know what to say. I just wanted him to leave me alone, quit humiliating me.
"Are you okay?" Lam asked.
I nodded.
I was afraid if I spoke, my voice would break. After an uncomfortable pause, Nick came to my rescue.
We were actually about to go chat.
Really? Lam's eyebrows furrowed.
Why?
Neither of us responded to his question. Instead, Nick guided me toward the entrance, calling over his shoulder.
She'll catch up with you later.
Lam looked taken aback, maybe even a bit jealous. A small part of me was happy about that. The front of the house was quiet, save for the chirps from the forest and the gurgling of water from the fountain. I was starting to feel more lucid. Nick and I sat shoulder to shoulder on the front stoop. He ferreted a pack of cigarettes out of his sport coat.
You mind if I smoke?
I shook my head. Truthfully, I thought smoking was gross, but Nick was being kind to me when I didn't deserve it. Thank you, I muttered, for what you did back there. He shrugged, lit his cigarette.
You saved me earlier, so I was just returning the favor.
He had made a bit of a mess with those two girls, but at least they both knew there was another woman involved. Do you know which one you'll pick? I asked.
No idea.
He laughed as he pocketed his pack of smokes.
Maybe neither. There's something missing. That spark, you know?
I nodded. But I was starting to wonder if the spark was overrated, or maybe my spark was just broken.
Do you want to talk about you and Lam?
I rubbed my eyebrow. I really wish people would stop asking me about it. I felt stupid enough already. Not really, if that's okay.
Fair enough, but between you and me, Lam's a dumbass. Trixie's not someone you want long term.
So I guess everyone knew about Lam and Trixie besides me. I really was an idiot. I rested my chin on my hand. I don't really know her, but she seems fine. She's pretty.
Pretty isn't everything. And if we're comparing looks, Trixie's got nothing on you.
He exhaled, and I couldn't read his expression through the smoke.
I think you should talk to Lam. If you give him an ultimatum, he'll choose you.
But he lied to me, I exclaimed. Multiple times. I won't be able to trust him again. I had said I didn't want to talk about it, but I guess all it took was some prodding and some compliments from Nick. I was so stinking easy.
We're supposed to be exploring our options here, and Lam was doing that. He shouldn't have lied about it, but he didn't want to mess up what you two had. People make mistakes. I'd give him a second chance.
I give second chances way too easily, I laughed. And third chances, and fourth chances. I told myself things would be different on this retreat, that I would be different. He exhaled the last drag of his cigarette and stubbed the remainder out.
Well, then at least talk to him. Tell him how you feel, or talk to Trixie. Just don't let them walk all over you.
I shrugged. He patted me on the shoulder, and I turned to face him. With his broad shoulders and deep-set blue eyes, he really was beautiful. I could see why other women fell for him. I could see why Anne would have fallen for him, or his look-alike, anyway.
At least think about it, he said.
I opened my palms. I've got nothing else to do here, he chuckled.
True, true.
He stood up then, brushed off his pants.
Well, I guess I'd better get back inside, clean up my own mess.
Good luck, I replied. And thank you again. He offered a corkscrew smile before he opened the front door and disappeared inside. I sat on the front porch until my backside fell asleep. I still wasn't ready to face Lam or Trixie, so I wandered over to the luxury SUV parked in the driveway. I noticed the stars were brighter than normal. They punctured the sky like diamonds, tiny pinholes of light in an endless black. I lowered myself onto the pebbled ground, laying supine, so I could better admire the stars. They really were beautiful. And I hadn't appreciated the island's beauty enough. I almost nodded off, despite the small rocks in my back. Even with the nap, I still felt exhausted, empty. I was in that transition period between wakefulness and sleep when I heard footsteps on the driveway.
Did you hear Christina's in trouble with the boss?
I recognized the husky voice. It was the handler with the eye tattoo.
Yeah.
Another handler, though I'm not sure which one. For mishandling a situation with a participant, I hear. My curiosity was piqued. The boss? I thought Christina was the boss. The footsteps were getting closer. I wanted to continue eavesdropping, so I did the dumbest thing imaginable. I rolled under the car. Gently, of course, so as not to disturb the gravel too much. The handlers were too busy talking to notice.
Yes, Reese.
Mishandled me?
Apparently she saw the check,
he added. I took in a sharp breath, so I didn't imagine that. Was Christina paying him? If so, then for what? I was fully awake now, every nerve in my body in overdrive, and I could feel the rock fragments digging into my skin with a new sharpness.
Yep, Christina's in for it now.
She sure is.
They laughed, and then a click. The car unlocked. The handlers stepped inside, the car buckling beneath their weight. The undercarriage was inches from my nose. The engine started. A rush of hot air and the smell of gasoline enveloped me. I've heard the primal reactions to fear are fight or flight. From my own experience, I've learned that's not totally true. Some people freeze. And in that moment, I was frozen. The handlers put the car in drive. The wheels dug into the gravel, rocks sputtering into the air. I closed my eyes, waiting for the inevitable, the blackness. But the wheels stayed straight. Even after the car was long gone, I remained immobile.
45. Anne. I pace back and forth in my room. I count my steps. I count the trees outside. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. I walk from the window to the chest of drawers so many times that my feet seem to leave permanent indentations in the carpet. How am I going to continue to investigate Reese's disappearance if I can't mention her name? I could ask around more discreetly, but what if there are cameras and microphones? And if there are, then who else is in on this production? I can't trust anyone here. Not really. I remove my phone from its hiding place and go through the usual routine of blocking my door and hiding in the water closet. I have a missed call from Honey, which I ignore, and another from Ned. I shouldn't ring him back. I'm already in hot water, but I can't help myself. I dial his number. When he answers, his voice isn't as chipper as it normally is. It's low and muted.
Anne, I'm glad I caught you. There's something.
I know, Ned. I got an email from the partners this morning. I hear a sharp intake of breath on the other end of the phone.
Gosh, Anne, I'm so sorry. I know you told me not to work on Reese's case at the office, but I just got so invested. I got careless. That nosy secretary. The one with a really tight bun and uppity nose?
Sherry, I say. It's one of the founding partner's secretaries. I've worked with her on a few projects, but I found her work subpar. She always seemed to be more interested in office gossip than actual work. Oh, the irony.
Yes, Sherry, Ned exhales. I guess she caught me looking at some news articles about Reese a few times. And then, once she got suspicious, she started following me to the bathroom. She overheard our conversation about Lamb and went straight to the partners.
I wince. I told Ned to never call me about Reese while he was at work. I also advised him to use a personal cell phone and a personal email, so as not to use company resources. It's not that personal affairs are forbidden at the office, but it's frowned upon if it takes up too much time and eats into your billable hours. And it's definitely frowned upon if you ask for extensive help from subordinate employees and their billable hours slip. Ned, it's okay. I was the one who asked you to get involved in this. It's on me. And honestly, it's probably fine. As long as your billable hours haven't slipped, I'll likely just get a slap on the wrist.
Well,
shit.
I press my forehead against the wall. I should have known. Otherwise, the partners wouldn't have made a big deal of it. How bad is it? I ask with closed eyes.
My hours dropped by about 30% the past week.
God damn it, Ned. I want to reprimand him, but I can't. I asked him to do this. Granted, I asked him to do this in addition to his normal work, not in place of it. Okay, it's okay. I say this to Ned as much as to myself. We just need to cut it off. Do not work on this anymore. I'll work directly with Pat from now on. I honestly should have done that from the beginning. But Ned was so eager, so helpful, and he had recent experience with criminal law. He knew better than I did what could be prosecuted and what couldn't. Pat has been out of the FBI for 15 years.
Fine, but since it's Christmas Eve, can we at least discuss it until the office reopens? There's no work for me to miss, and I do have some news.
I should say no. I should hang up the phone right now, but I'm too far gone. What is it?
They filed a missing person report for Lamb.
I don't know whether I should be excited or heartbroken. How'd that happen? I stutter.
After I talked to his parents, his mom called him repeatedly. After 24 hours of no response, she called around to his friends, anyone whose phone number she had. She posted the situation on social media, and everyone said the same thing. No one has heard from him since the retreat. So she filed a report.
I feel like weights are situated on my chest. My God, this is terrible.
I know, he whispers.
After a pause, Ned continues to talk, and my mind drifts. Ned's voice fades. I stare at a dent in the floor, a nick in the otherwise smooth marble, and wonder how it got there. Surely Christina wouldn't allow such a blemish in her perfect bathroom. I reach out to touch it, to feel the sharp edges on my pointer finger. I dig harder and harder and harder until my skin tears. A drop of blood drips onto the white tile.
Anne, Ned calls. Anne, did you hear what I just said?
I put my index finger in my mouth to stop the bleeding. It tastes like metal, and the texture makes me queasy. Sorry, yeah. Repeat that one more time.
Pat is bringing this to the FBI.
That's good, I huff. I rub my forehead. There's a pain behind my temple I can't shake. Surely now they'll look into the retreat with a double disappearance.
I hope so. They're idiots if they don't. But it doesn't help that Reese and Lamb are both known to be flighty. I know you don't like to hear that, but I just want you to be prepared.
I know, I say. After a beat, Ned calls my name again.
Anne?
Yeah?
I think you should get out of there.
46. Reese. When my heart rate slowed enough to stand, I stumbled inside. My mind buzzed from what I had just overheard. Teddy's check. In trouble with the boss. Mishandled Reese. I needed to find Christina. The noise level had risen several decibels since I'd been outside. The participants were louder, their speech slower, their eyes glazed. I searched in the kitchen, in the living room, and outside on the patio. But Christina was nowhere to be found. I decided she must be in a talking room, so I started checking each one. I had a couple left when I felt a hand on my wrist. Lamb's blonde hair was in my periphery, his forehead lined.
We need to talk, he said.
Can we talk later? I'm trying to find Christina. I tried to ignore the increase of my heart rate as I turned the door handle of another talking room. Empty. Do you know where she is? I asked. I didn't glance back at Lamb as I headed for the next room. I heard the patter of his footsteps behind me.
I assume with a participant, he called. Reese, can you wait up? I know you know, and I need to explain.
I still didn't know what I was going to say to him. Luckily, I didn't have to deal with him just yet, as the next room contained Christina. She was in deep conversation with Nick, their voices low. They seemed startled, which wasn't surprising given my abrupt entrance. What was surprising was a twinge of fright in Christina's eyes.
Reese, she said. Can I help you?
Christina, I need to speak with you. When no one responded, I continued.
It's urgent.
Nick and Christina exchanged concerned glances, and then Nick stood up to leave.
No problem, he said. We were wrapping up anyway.
He grabbed Lam's shoulder and guided him out of the room before closing the door. I lowered myself onto the chair that Nick had occupied. I had to blink a few times before my eyes adjusted to the lights. It was always much brighter in the talking rooms than in the other areas of the house.
What's going on?
Christina asked. I had been so focused on finding Christina that I hadn't planned exactly how to approach the topic.
Well, a few things are bugging me.
Like what?
She shifted in her seat, crossed her legs.
Like, I saw Teddy leave here with a check. Why?
We offered a partial refund. She said this a beat too quickly, like it had been rehearsed. Since he left with 2 weeks remaining, we didn't feel it was fair for him to pay the full amount.
That made sense, but it didn't explain how he sobered up so quickly.
Who's we? I thought you owned this retreat. I overheard your handlers mention your boss.
She was calm. Like most companies, we have a board of directors, some investors. I founded the retreat, and I run it, but I still have to answer to the board and the investors. I wasn't the most savvy businesswoman, but that sounded plausible. Maybe I was manufacturing drama where there wasn't any. The handlers referred to the boss as a singular person, but perhaps I misheard. Or maybe they meant the board president?
Who did you overhear?
She asks.
I didn't see them, just heard them. They also mentioned you mishandled me. What did they mean by that?
Christina was still. She blinked rapidly before scanning the room. She brushed her hair behind her ear before answering.
I'm not supposed to let participants skip activities. I told you that earlier.
But why? If someone wants to skip an activity, what's the big deal?
She sighed. It's not how the journey works. Since you're only here for a limited time, we want participants to make the most of it. No missed opportunities.
But, I stammered. I was running out of questions.
How did the board know you mishandled me? They're not here, are they?
I report to them every day. We had a call after I kicked off the cocktail party. I shouldn't have mentioned letting you get a couple hours' sleep, but they understood with the circumstances.
Oh. I slumped into the chair. All of this made sense. Why was I so alarmed? Maybe I really was losing my mind.
Christina took advantage of my silence.
Have you had a chance to talk to Lam yet?
No, I sighed. I'm not sure what to say yet. I don't think there is much to say. He wanted to have his cake and eat it too, and I'm not interested in being with someone like that.
I think you should hear him out.
How did everyone seem to know the situation with Lam better than I did? How was I missing so much?
I'm going to set up a one-on-one date for you two tomorrow so you can at least clear the air. I'm thinking scuba diving. It's really gorgeous, and it's hard to be in a sour mood during that experience.
There isn't a lot of talking during scuba diving.
No, but you'll have a chance to connect before.
I twirled my crimson hair between my fingers. Could I go with someone else? I'll talk to Lam eventually, but I want to gather my thoughts before I do so. I don't know. I feel so stupid still.
Her face pinched together, and she drew a long, slow breath through her nose.
Okay, she said. But then after that, you can't put it off any longer. Remember what we talked about. You're better than that. You need to stand up for yourself.
I agreed. But I wondered how long I could get away with avoiding Lam if I kept asking nicely. She asked if I had any more questions, if I felt more at ease, and I said I did. She inquired about my talk with Nick, my general disposition, and after a few more unsuccessful attempts, my feelings about Lam and Trixie. I was honest. I didn't have the energy not to be. After 45 minutes of conversing, she told me it was time to wind down the cocktail party. I offered a silent prayer and slipped to my room quickly so Lam wouldn't have time to grab me. I huddled under the covers of my massive bed. I wished, not for the first time, that I had my phone so I could call Anne. She would have known what to do. Because even long after my conversation with Christina ended, I couldn't shake the feeling that she was lying. There was something, or someone, that frightened her.
47. Anne. It's been almost 24 hours since I talked with Ned, and every minute has felt off. Christmas has never been my favorite holiday, at least since my parents died. But today has been especially disorienting. We had a mandatory group breakfast, a first on the retreat, flowing with Bloody Marys, Irish coffee, and more hot food than is necessary or appetizing in tropical weather. With the earlier start time, I forgot to check in with Ned. I planned to text him after, but there was a group date immediately following the meal. So I told myself I'd message him later. And in the meantime, I needed to keep a low profile, blend in as best I could. I made small talk. I removed Reese from my vocabulary. I let Nick kiss me, hold my hand, run his fingers through my hair. I participated in every single goddamn activity Christina requested. But the holiday and Lamb's news are like acid in my stomach, slowly eating me from the inside out. By the time the last activity of the day ends, I'm desperate for some fresh air, a small break from the facade. I still need to contact Ned, but I have a little time before I reach the 24-hour mark, the designated time frame before Ned is supposed to call the police. I head outside toward the beach. The sun is setting, a red lantern hanging low in the sky, cloaking the world in a bloody veil. Christina is outside too, talking to one of the participants near the patio doors. She has changed into an off-white dress. In normal light, she would have looked not quite beautiful, but elegant, and certainly bridal. But in the sunset, the dress is on fire. It's more peaceful near the ocean. I need something peaceful. I plop down on the sand and let the waves massage my feet. I put my head between my knees and squeeze my eyes shut. I don't know what to make of Lam's disappearance. Does that mean that he and Reese are both dead? It seems like too big of a coincidence that they are both missing. Did they go off after the retreat and run into trouble? Or did they die here? Perhaps by accident? Or maybe they're both hiding? Together? Separately? I've never considered, not really, the possibility that Reese voluntarily went missing. But perhaps if the situation were dire enough, she might think that was her only option. Reese has always wanted to leave Nashville. She brought up the topic numerous times over the years. But one memory in particular is seared into my brain. We had just finished a hike at Percy Warner Park. That was my go-to when the cravings were bad in the early stage of my recovery. And we sat on the steps overlooking Bellmead Boulevard. From that vantage point, you can only see two parallel roads in a carpet of trees. The foliage fades into the horizon, and it's as if you're sitting on the throne of nature, the gatekeeper to the end of the world. If you could, Reese asked, head in hands, would you give up a year of your life to sail around the world?
I don't like to travel much. Spending hours packing and getting from point A to point B, sleeping in a foreign bed, being stripped of your belongings, the experience exhausts me. Plus, I get terrible motion sickness. The last time I was on a boat, I spent my time leaning over the railing, retching. Every time I thought I was finished, the boat would rock, my footing would become unsteady, I would catch a whiff of fish or sulfide, and I would be right back where I started. That sounds fucking terrible, I replied. Reese threw her head back and laughed. She couldn't contain herself. Tears streaked her cheeks, and she had to grab hold of my wrist to steady herself. When she could speak again, she nudged my shoulder with hers. Oh, come on, she pleaded. The experience would be so amazing. I'd see every wonder of the world, the Egyptian pyramids, the Great Wall of China, the Palace of Versailles, Yellowstone. There's so much beauty out there, and I've only seen a sliver of it. I've never even left Tennessee, you know.
Really? I asked. Not even when you were a kid?
No, we couldn't afford it. Even if we could, we weren't the family vacation type. I always thought I would leave when I got older, but then I had to work on getting sober, and now I'm with the Nashville Dance Company. It's funny. Before you know it, life can slip through your fingers.
Wouldn't you get lonely, though, not seeing your friends for a whole year?
I don't know, she shrugged. I make friends pretty easily. I could meet people along the way. And besides, some of my loneliest times were in a crowd of people.
I stared out at the road ahead of me, mulling over her words. It was autumn, and the surrounding trees were butter yellow. It was like standing on a pot of gold. How could Reese want to leave this?
I would miss you, though, Reese said, as if she were inside my brain. I'd land every few days so I could send you a postcard. That way, it'd be like you were traveling with me.
You'd better, I said. I'd be worried sick if you didn't.
48. Reese.
How you doing, sailor? Lam asked, as I leaned over the side of the boat, watching the island disappear into the horizon. He grazed my face with his thumb and index finger, brushing away a stray lock of hair that was stuck to my forehead. I flinched at his touch and pushed him away. I was still fuming that he was here. I told Christina I didn't want to spend the day with you, I said. Lam's shoulders fell.
I begged her. You kept avoiding me last night, and this was the only way I could think to spend time with you.
I went to the other side of the boat, where Henry and the scuba instructor were whispering. Lam gripped my arm a little too tightly. Let go, I said through gritted teeth.
No, you can't keep walking away, he shouted.
I saw Henry and the scuba diver glance in our direction. Why wouldn't you talk to me? He had been prodding all morning, ever since he'd sauntered onto the boat. Once he had boarded, my jaw on the floor at the sight of him, the scuba instructor immediately motored away. I was trapped, and I didn't even see it coming. Lam had been pleading with me ever since for the past 30 minutes or so, and I was at my wit's end. The boat was only so big, and there were only so many ways to say no. I finally snapped. Because there's nothing to say, I yelled. I could feel three sets of eyes on me, but I was too livid to care anymore. You lied to me. You told me you weren't seeing Trixie, and then I caught you fucking her in the crew's room. Lam looked taken aback. I didn't usually curse or shout. How do you think that made me feel? I continued. If you had been honest about seeing other people from the beginning, I might have understood. But you didn't. You lied right to my face over and over again. I started laughing. I felt like a maniac lost at sea. And you know what the worst part is? I actually thought you were different from all the other guys I've dated. You seemed responsible, mature, considerate. You fed me all this bullshit about wanting a long-term relationship and feeling something special between us. And it turns out You're just like all the other losers I've slept with. Lamb's Adam's apple quivered as he swallowed.
Well, I shouted with open arms. Say something. You wanted to talk, so go ahead.
You're right, he finally said. I should have been honest about seeing Trixie. I wasn't ready to commit after that first night, but now I am. Please, please give me another chance.
He got down on his knees, put his arms around my waist, and buried his head in my stomach.
Get up. He didn't move. Lamb, get up right now before I really lose my temper.
The resolution in my voice must have been convincing, because Lamb slowly got to his feet. He peered at me, desperation in his eyes. I told myself it wasn't going to work, although I'll admit it did feel nice to still be wanted. I could still feel the scuba instructor's eyes on us. After an awkward minute of silence, he cleared his throat.
Should we get a move on then? We're ready.
During all my yelling, I hadn't realized the boat had stopped. I think that would be wise, I said. I walked over to where he was standing. Eventually, Lamb followed, his shoulders hunched in defeat. The tension between us was still palpable, but the scuba instructor continued an attempt to neutralize the situation.
Okay, just remember, follow my lead, don't come up too fast, and always, always breathe.
I tried to set aside my feelings about Lamb and recall the scuba diving rules hammered into my brain this morning as I practiced descending, ascending, and keeping a neutral buoyancy in the shallow waters of the lagoon near the mansion. At the time, I had thought it was odd that I was practicing alone, but Henry and the scuba instructor had assured me that my date had already been prepped. Now, I knew the real reason my date had been missing. Just breathe, I thought. Now was not the time to be angry. I needed calm. I needed to focus on what the scuba instructor was saying.
Do you remember what happens if you rise too quickly or don't breathe?
The scuba instructor asked. You rupture your lungs or ears, or both, I answered. Again, I tried to recall his exact words to keep my mind occupied. He had told me that I had to lower and raise myself slowly so my body could adjust to the pressure differences, or my organs would pop like balloons. It made me nervous then, and I was still nervous. Those were some serious repercussions. The scuba instructor proceeded to demonstrate again how to clear our masks and read our gauges, which let us know how much air remained in our tanks. He showed us his scuba dive computer, which he kept on his wrist, that tracked our time and our depth. He said we wouldn't go deeper than 18 meters, which meant absolutely nothing to me.
And don't touch anything, the scuba instructor added.
There aren't sharks, are there?
Lamb asked. It seemed as if the instructions, the warnings, and the imminent risk had distracted him from our earlier fight as well.
No dangerous sharks, no, just black tips, the instructor responded.
How do I know if it's a black tip and not a dangerous one?
The black tip shark has a black tip on its fin.
The scuba was kind enough to say this last bit without much condescension.
And what does a dangerous shark look like?
Well, there are tiger sharks. Those have stripes on the side like a tiger,
the instructor said as he brushed three fingers in a horizontal position across his left ribcage.
But the stripes do go away with age.
Oh, great. So no identifying marks for the adult man-eating sharks. The instructor must have sensed our increasing fear. He softened, tried to placate us.
Don't worry, you'll be fine.
And you're sure we don't need, like, a suit?
Lamb asked, as he pointed to his bare body, clad only in swimming trunks.
No, the instructor said. That's only for cold water.
As the instructor exchanged a few words with Henry, Lamb and I strapped on our flippers in silence. When we finished, we got into position, our legs dangling over the side into the ocean. Lamb cleared his throat and straightened his posture.
It'll be great, Lamb said. People do this all the time, and we have a pro with us. One of my buddies did it for the first time about a year ago, and he said it was one of the greatest experiences of his life. We'll see some seahorses, coral reef, schools of fish.
You're right, I replied, with about as much conviction as he had. I was still angry with him, but right then, I needed encouragement more than I needed my pride. It'll be awesome. People do this all the time.
They wouldn't let anything happen to us out here,
Lam continued. Despite his words, there was uncertainty in his voice. I had a bad feeling about the date, and I wondered if it was too late to call the whole thing off. Before that thought could muster speed or strength, the instructor came up behind us and gave us the go signal. I took a deep breath, trying to calm the remainder of my nerves, put on my mouthpiece, and went under.
49. Anne. On the beach, eyes still firmly shut, I'm still reminiscing about Reese, reliving a better time in my life when she was by my side. I contemplate how things could have gone so wrong. And then, the present catches up to me like a slap in the face. An ear-piercing scream pulsates across the beach. It's so out of the blue, I almost think I imagined it. But the sound is too shrill, too alarming. I jump up and glance toward the cry. I see Sally, small Sally, in the distance running toward me. She's in a life vest. It dwarfs her small frame. She's barefoot. I take off to meet her. I run faster than I've ever run before. I don't feel my legs or the sand beneath my feet. I just focus on her face, her panicked, wild-eyed face, with tendrils of wet hair flopping in the wind, and I close the distance between us. Sally, I cry when I'm within earshot. What's wrong? What happened? It's Dermot, she screams. Ocean water drips from her hair, her life jacket. Her bathing suit is like a wet rag. He fell. He said the harness was too loose. He said it. He said it. Okay, slow down, I say, as I put the pieces together. Dermot is one of the participants, Dr. Dermot. He and Sally went on a one-on-one date together today. Where did he fall? From parasailing? Yes, yes, she nods. He hit the water. It was so loud, like a brick. He won't wake up. He said it was too loose. He said it. I glance behind her to evaluate the scene. With my eyes closed and my mind occupied, I hadn't noticed the speedboat approaching. I see that it's on the shore now, the lime-green parasail floating lazily on the water. There are several handlers surrounding a stretch of beach near the boat, huddled around something. Dermot, most likely. In their black uniforms, they look like officers at a crime scene. Two handlers are running toward us. I don't have a lot of time. They were trying to calm me down, Sally continues. They said he was going to be fine, but he's not moving, Anne. He's not moving. How did you get away? I ask. I told them I just needed some air. They weren't listening. I need someone to listen to me, to believe me. She gazes at me with full moon eyes. I believe you, I say as the handlers approach. I believe you.
50. Reese. We descended slowly into the water, just like we had practiced that morning. It took a moment for my eyes to adjust, but once they did, I was enveloped by the velvet blue of the ocean. A few fish darted around us, but for the most part, the sea was still and unmoving, creating a soundless void that was eerily peaceful. I watched our instructor carefully as he studied his wrist computer, and I waited for the hand signals that told us to descend or pause. We continued to lower methodically, but it felt unnatural. I was used to diving into the water head first, unbothered by depth or speed. So this snail's pace of a descent felt like a trap, a suspension in time and space. Once we reached about 10 feet below the surface, Lam touched my wrist and nodded toward the ocean floor, careful not to make any sudden movements. I was nervous to take my eyes off the instructor, but something about Lam's demeanor told me it was worth it. It was. Vibrant coral skeletons carpeted the floor. The reef extended as far as the eye could see, no 2 square inches alike. Finger-like trees of soft pink, tubes of violet, shrubs of baby blue, ribbons of burnt orange, and fish of every shape, size, and color slipped in and out of the ocean's garden. There were angelfish with black and white zebra stripes, arrowhead fish the color of daisies, pufferfish that ballooned to the size of my head. I had never seen so much color. Every shade of the rainbow was highlighted in the ecosystem. It didn't even appear real. I grinned behind my regulator mouthpiece. I forgot about my worries, just like that. The uneasiness I had felt was pushed to a corner of my mind. This was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen, the most beautiful moment I had ever experienced. This was why I had come to the retreat, to witness magic, beautiful, breathtaking magic. Closer to the ocean floor, I spotted an enormous sea turtle swimming through the reef. She was my size, between 5 and 6 feet. She didn't have a hard shell, more like a leather jacket. Canary yellow fish nibbled at her head, her shell, her arms, but she didn't seem to mind. She kept sucking on the reef. There were several other turtles nearby. They looked more like the animals I recognized, greenish, hard shell, smaller than my torso. But the life-size turtle was my favorite. I thought I even detected a grin, but that was likely wishful thinking. At one point, I was engulfed by a school of fish, hundreds and hundreds of cherry red fish the size of my palm, an underwater poppy field. I was drunk with happiness. I giggled as the fish tickled my arms, legs, cheeks. Bubbles rose above my head. I wasn't supposed to laugh. It used more compressed oxygen than necessary, but I couldn't help it. Lamb seized my hand to pull me out of the field. If he hadn't, I think I would have stayed in that position until my dying day. We needed to keep up with the instructor, who was approaching a murky object in the distance. The water grew thicker and more turbulent. I had to strain my eyes to see. Eventually, I realized the object was a ship on its side. It was rife with holes, covered in silt and various marine life. It was a sad picture. I imagined the sailors on board, separated from their home, their families, their friends, forever lost at sea. And then I stopped. I realized why the water was unsettled. Sharks. Dozens of sharks circling above the wreck. Taunting us. Taunting me. I held my breath before I remembered that I had to breathe. Inhale. Exhale. There were so many of them. Their massive bodies glided weightlessly in the water. I tried to inspect their fins, to check if they were black-tip sharks, but it was impossible from that angle. The instructor gave us the okay hand signal, although his body language didn't convey the same message. He pointed away from the animals, and we backed away slowly, our eyes never leaving the wreck. The sharks didn't seem to notice us, which helped me stay calm. I reminded myself, most shark attacks were accidents. They confused humans with other types of prey. When we had retreated a safe distance, I exhaled. Almost safe. The instructor pointed upward, indicating it was time to ascend. We started to rise. So far, so good. But then Lamb's leg caught on a piece of coral, a tear in his calf muscle. I froze as I waited for the inevitable. Blood escaped from his leg, diffusing into the water and creating small, wispy balloons. The sharks didn't appear bothered, for now. The instructor gave us the okay signal again, and we continued to rise. Despite my rapid heartbeat, I tried to maintain a normal breathing pattern. If you rise too fast, your lungs will pop, Reese. The sharks are too far away. It'll be fine. I wondered which death I'd prefer, a ruptured lung or a shark bite. I promised myself that if I made it out alive, I'd never step foot into the ocean again. Just get me to the top. About halfway up, with a trail of blood below us, I saw a couple sharks halt their circular pattern around the ship. They swiveled in our direction and started to close the gap between us. Oh God, I thought. Oh God, this is it. This is how it ends for me. The sharks descended closer to the ocean floor where the blood had originated. We were about 3/4 of the way to the top. Time had never seemed so stagnant. The instructor kept giving us the okay signal, reminding us that we couldn't ascend too rapidly. But things were not okay. Not at all. The sharks reached the ocean floor directly beneath us and re-engaged their circular swim pattern, mixing the blood with the rest of the ocean water. And when we were only a few feet from the top, almost an arm's length away, the sharks started to rise. My hand broke the water's surface. I checked on the sharks' progress. They were approaching rapidly, open mouths and teeth bared. I spat out my mouthpiece. The instructor did the same. He pushed me toward the boat's stern where Henry was waiting.
"Grab her,"
the instructor said through gritted teeth. Henry must have picked up on our thinly veiled panic. He reached for my arms, pulling me on board. Even after my flippers were safely inside the boat, I had the feeling something was gnawing at my feet. I ripped the flippers off, and then I focused on helping to get Lam and the instructor out of the water. Henry already had hold of the instructor's right arm. I couldn't see Lam's head yet, but I had to focus on getting the instructor out. I seized his left wrist, and with a strength I didn't know I possessed, I helped lift a 200-pound man in scuba gear out of the ocean. The instructor toppled into the boat and threw off his buoyancy control device and oxygen tank. I shifted my attention back to the ocean. Lam's head was bobbing on top of the water. He dog-paddled our way, careful not to thrash too much. His eyes were as wild as the animals below us. Just as the instructor and Henry reached for his wrists, Lam was jerked downward. Our small boat nearly toppled over from the momentum. I ran to the other side with our oxygen tanks and weights, trying to even the weight distribution. I couldn't let the boat overturn. I couldn't see what was happening with Lam. I felt a wave of nausea, but I held it in. Not now, I thought.
"Hang on!"
the instructor shouted, his voice primal and panicked.
"Lam!"
I heard a thud, and I felt the boat shift in my direction. I slammed against the side of the boat, my forehead ricocheting off a metal rail. And then, everything went black.
What an episode. Things are not looking good for poor Lam, or Reese, or Anne for that matter. Will Anne listen to Ned and get out of there, or will she keep digging for answers? Stay tuned for the final episode. So don't forget to subscribe to Camcat Unwrapped. If you don't want to miss a beat, listen to Beneath the Marigolds now on the audiobook platform of your choice. All our books are also available in print and ebook formats on camcatbooks.com or wherever books are sold. Tune in to hear all our audiobooks as we release them right here on Camcat Unwrapped as serialized podcasts. The first two episodes of every book can always be found here, but subsequent episodes will be available for free listening only for a short time after their release. After that, they'll be gone. But don't worry, the audiobooks are available for purchase on Audible and other major retailers. Camcat Unwrapped also offers other Camcat books as podcasts. Also, check out our background episodes where we unwrap exclusive content related to our books, including interviews with the authors, editors, and other industry professionals. Before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you. Tune in again to Camcat Unwrapped, because Camcat Unwrapped is where book lovers meet.